You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Bernadette Peters.
Hey, I'm Anissa Foles.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Fergie L. Philippe.
Hi, I'm Eliza Ullman.
Hola, soy Florencia Cuenca.
Y yo soy Jaime Lozano.
Hi, this is L. Morgan Lee.
It's Alex Brightman from Broadway and beyond.
Hi, this is Joe Iconis.
And this is Lauren Marquez.
Y estás escuchando.
And you're listening to
B-Way Show.
B-Way Show.
B-Way
Show.
The podcast.
Hey, friends. Welcome to B-Way Show, the podcast. Your home for theater conversations from a passionate Broadway fan and reporter. I'm your host, Shoshana, and I want to start off by emphasizing Black Lives Matter, period.
Show must go on.
It's show time. Get it? Because I'm Beetlejuice and she's show. Anyway, B-Way Showtime. You know, the whole being a podcaster thing. Listen or else.
This week's guests are Eliza Ullman and Nick Walker. Eliza is best known for her work in Hamilton, King Kong, and Six, the musical. She was the former dance captain and Universal Swing in Hamilton on Broadway, original Broadway company member of King Kong, where she was part of the Cheetah Rivera award-winning ensemble, as well as the assistant dance captain. Most recently, Eliza became the U.S. associate choreographer for Six, the musical. Eliza's been in Fosse Verdon, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Saturday Night Live, and so much more. In regard to her work teaching, quote, she's an enthusiastic teacher who instills confidence of self in young performers so they can achieve true excellence in their craft, end quote. Nick Walker is best known for his roles in Hamilton, Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations, and Motown the Musical. He was in Aaron Burr in the Philip Company of Hamilton after performing in the ensemble and understudying multiple roles on Broadway. Most recently, he's been leading the company of Ain't Too Proud as Otis Williams. Nick's been on Law & Order SVU and has a multitude of projects he's been working on, including The Chaos Twins with Sasha Hutchings, and Little Justice the Podcast with Alex Smolo. Here's part one of our conversation from April 17th, recorded for my live YouTube series, The Show Must Go On Line. Here's Nick and Eliza. Enjoy.
Awesome. I think we're live. Everyone watching at home, thank you so much for tuning in. And Nick and Eliza, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course.
Happy absolutely. Thrilled about we're, it.
We're going to have so much fun, as I like to call them, shonanigans.
Mm-hmm. That feels appropriate.
Got to stay on brand. So
yeah, absolutely.
So let's just start off casual. How have the two of you been? Nick, I know you did a live Instagram earlier today. That's like a 1 o'clock every week type of thing.
Every Friday at 1 p.m. We get on the live and we have some shenanigans. It was funny too, because I forgot. So I did the, back in 2017, I did the ABC showcase and I forgot that we actually had our showcase at our showcase, like was having like a little party, a Zoom party at 1 as well. I was like, oops. So I literally I did the live is usually like an hour. I did it like 30 minutes today because I was like, yeah, let me get over there and like say hi. It was awesome. It was awesome to see all their faces. But the live is always fun. I'm waiting for Eliza to come and do it, you know. But Eliza doesn't like talking to me. You know,
I hate it. Like, yeah.
She doesn't like interacting with me. So yeah, it's gonna take a second.
That's why I send Nick an emoji videos, because I don't want him to see my face. It's important for him that we're in regular contact, because
This actually brings up a really good point that I think we should get at early, you know. So you ask us how we are. I don't know how Eliza is, because she only sends me her emotions via these digital masks of these animoji. And what I will say is that her animoji of herself is disturbingly accurate. I don't like how close to life she was able to get within the parameters of the app. It's like her face. It's very strange. I don't like that. I don't like that she has that much time. The other animoji that she sent me was a giraffe.
I did send him a giraffe. A singing giraffe, no less.
yeah, that giraffe is really not cool. And I really want her to rethink that. So, Eliza, rethink that. You know what I mean?
Well, I just want to make sure that you're not alone in this time of social distancing and that you know you have the animal kingdom by your side, as well as me in digital form. Not actually me, because I hate you, but you know, memes and GIFs and various Bitmojis.
Traps.
Exactly.
What we call them, traps. So, yeah, man.
How are you?
Yeah, that's the more important question. How are you doing?
Me? Oh, I feel like I'm just a fly on the wall in this conversation right now.
Don't be. No, you gotta step in, because this will go so sour.
Yeah, I'm great. I'm over here in Washington State, here with my boyfriend and our dog, and just like chilling. Very fortunate to have outside space. Like, we were kicking the footy around before in the backyard. So classic. So all good. And I want to show you. So we started the Marvel Marathon, Nick, as we mentioned, and I got us Avengers whiskey glasses.
Classy move.
You went all in. I sure did. Well done.
But I'm actually a Wonder Woman girl, so this is mine.
That's beautiful as well.
I am here for that as well.
Yeah, we approve.
Did you get those like on Amazon?
On Etsy.
Oh, nice. And
there are Etsy's like
more local vendors.
Yeah. Right. I'm all about the local. And there were so many options, and these were like the classiest. So that's what I went.
Because you're classy.
Mm-hmm. You are classy.
And the Avengers are classy, so you got to match it.
All classy, all the way around. So when I had Fergie on, and I'm not going to quote directly, but it's going to be pretty close. He called you a garbage person. And I just want...
He would never call me that.
he wouldn't call you that.
I'd love to have you respond to that.
Okay. So let's talk about Fergina for a second. And that is his name, Fergina. And that's a wonderful name, and I've always loved it. You know, I think that our industry, our sector of the entertainment industry, breaks down into like two groups. There's people who came into this industry and like fought hard to be here and like want to be here and like love what they do and like, you know, and like love theater and Broadway and like all that stuff. And that's very much Fergie. That's who Fergie is. Right. And then there's people like me that like should not be in here at all. And how they were led into this industry is a mystery to me. And who like everything they touch just burns to embers. You know what I mean? So I feel like, and then within that group, there's two subsections. You can either lean into that or you cannot. I lean into it, you know, and I think that what you're really experiencing with Fergina is just, he knows that like, I am like chaos. You know what I mean? And like, I'm there to kind of destroy everything that he holds dear. And so if he wants to call that a garbage person, I would call that progress. Right. I would call that the next step in evolution. And that's just what it is. And I don't know how to make it any clearer than that. You know, so Fergie, if you're listening out there, sweetie, I love you. I'm so sorry that you are of the past, but I am the future. And, you know, that's just what it's weird because I'm older than him. So I shouldn't be the future. But and yet here we are. Bangarang. The shirt says it all, you know. So that's
what
I gotta say.
I just had a vision of.
What?
You know him? You know, you're gonna hate this and I'm gonna.
I already hate it.
You know in Hercules, those two little gremlins that are like friends of Hades?
Yeah,
I feel like that actually really perfectly captures Nick because he like wants to raise hell and he wants to like be part of mischief, but he's also gonna like massively mess it up. Like he's gonna do it incorrectly. And then there's something also like weirdly endearing about like their incompetency. And that's Nick Walker.
Just incompetent. Incompetent. How was he let in? That was something that Fergie would ask me several times. Like Fergie, like at the end of so many of our performances in Hamilton, would just come up to me and be like, how did you get here? Like, how, with all that you do, how do you have a job? How did you arrive? How do you still maintain? And I would never have an answer for him. You know, Eliza, you know, she worked as our dance captain for, how long were you dance captain? How long were you DC for on Hamilton?
Year and a half, or maybe a little bit less. Yeah.
And, you know, so much of the experience, you know, of working with Eliza, you know, is, she's, I mean, and I'm not going to compliment her often, but what I will say is she's incredible on stage. And she, you know, why she's so great at what she does is not only her knowledge of what's going on with her, whoever, whatever role she's in at the time, but like, just, I would say of like dramaturgy as a whole, I would say of like just a vast understanding of how a machine of a show works, which is why, you know, made her dance captain. But I feel like our relationship when she was on stage and I was on stage was probably very frustrating for her, because I, as man six, especially in the ensemble of Hamilton Broadway, had little to no regard for like what should be happening. You know what I mean? And it was only like, what can I make happen? Particularly when Eliza's on stage. You know what I mean? What can I make? Let's make things.
What is unfortunate for me is that although I was in a position of leadership, I also do love to play on stage.
Yeah.
So it's, and for me, I'm always like, okay, what can I give people permission to do? Like, what are moments that I'm like, I know that brings that person so much joy. That is 100% incorrect, but it makes them happy. So like, what are the moments we can allow them? Like, this was the constant battle with the Neil Haskells of the world. It's like,
oh God, no, Neil Haskell.
Neil, you can't do that. That one's not allowed. It's one step too far.
You actually can't do that.
Nick Walker is another great example of that. Of like, nope, we got to rein it in again. Someone's going crazy. At the same time, if I was on specifically as Woman 5 with him, it was like, why are you bringing out the worst in me?
Game over.
Why lost all credibility? So
if you don't know, in the ensemble of, I'm sure everybody listening knows, but the ensemble of Hamilton, Man 6 and Woman 5 are like a pair. Like, they just spend the show together. So whoever my Woman 5 was, you know, my Woman 5, like, that I started with was Elizabeth Judd. And that was like my ride or die. And she, to the point where, like, when I had my last show as Man 6, she had already moved on to standby. It was one of the best things ever happened to me in theater. This was a brilliant surprise. She'd been standby for like a month at that point. So she hadn't been on stage with me. She came back as Woman 5 for my last show. And like, I didn't know until I stepped on stage and it was one of the sweetest things that ever happened. But when Eliza was on as Woman 5, it was a mistake. It just should not have been. Like, you can't do that. You can't have her and me in tracks like that.
And unfortunately, when I first started out, Donald Weber had also recently joined the company as Man 5. The three of those people just really have a lot of time together. And so Nick and Donald, having the history that they do, also quite enjoyed like ganging up on me. They would be like, or we'd be on stage, but their shoulders would be covered behind my back. And so they'd be taking their in-stage arm and like poking me, or like trying to like unzip my corset, or like take my gloves out of my hand. Like, monsters.
I unzip boots. That was my big thing.
That was your thing?
Boots. I love unzip boots. Because like, there's so many moments where people are like frozen and stuff and like doing like cool moves and shit, but they can't move their feet. And so I'd just be like, zip.
And just, professional person I know.
Can I tell you though? The change that's happened in the past 3 years, like, if you were to be backstage with me, I mean, Ain't Too Proud is a completely different beats. Because I don't
you're
have
not
any
backstage,
time.
Which is actually I'm quite helpful. Backstage. Less time to plot.
Less time
and
to
you're
plot.
Probably more mentally exhausted, so also less time to plot on stage because you literally carry the production.
I literally can't do anything because the show won't happen.
In a way, actually, it's like probably better in the long run.
Much
it's like
better.
This is the only way to control you, like give you no opportunities to
no.
so many lines that you have to be professional.
you have to be, I have to be professional. But I do appreciate, and I said that in the letter that I wrote to Lynn and Tommy and like, and Pat, like, because there is, you know, I think that one of the things that I miss about ensemble is like, because of the amount of work you're doing, but also the kind of up and down of your track generally when you're ensemble, like, you know, because there's not generally a narrative focus with you, you do have time and you do have, there's a certain sense of community that I miss. And there's a certain sense of like play that I miss, just because like that's the ensemble is like, they're the hardest working people in the building, but they also just, they have to rely on each other. And in that reliance and trust comes a playfulness and a fun generally when you have a good ensemble. And, you know, I will say, like back to the letter that I wrote, I was like, Hamilton taught me how to properly lead a ship. I did not know before Hamilton. And I will say that, like, that was like, I'm very grateful for the 3 years that I had to learn how to do this and not be a complete jackass. Do you know what I mean? So I think that it was all like a great learning ground for me. You know, and it's not that hard to not pull pranks, like, just don't do it, you know? just don't.
Just be a grown-up.
Just be a grown-up. But like,
and yet, that's kind of a big deal for you.
That's a very big deal for me. It's huge for me. But like, I don't ever want to lose that sense of play. Like, that's the thing, you know, there's so few shows, and I would say this about Eliza as well. I think the thing that makes, you know, why it kind of force Eliza to be one of my good friends is like, I feel like for both of us, there's shows that we truly, I don't think would survive it. Not because we couldn't do them, but just because of, I think one of the things that I love about Eliza is what fulfills her and what doesn't fulfill her are two very distinct things. And she's, and just from being your friend, you are in a great way, very aware of, and I think that you've always looked for the thing that's like, okay, even like legitimately, you as DC of Hamilton, you were good. You were set. You were great. We can sit there and you can make that money. And then you were like, you know what, but I want to do something new. So then you go to King Kong. And then like you keep challenging yourself. I mean, like that takes a certain type of person. You know what I mean? And I think that that's one of the things that I just don't ever want to lose is just that sense of like, I am here to play. You know what I mean? Yes, I'm here for money and I'm very fortunate to have these jobs, but like I play pretend. You know what I mean? And I get to act like a badass in these crazy situations. That is fun to me. And I always try to find that balance of like, yeah, I gotta be serious, but I also playing is how I get my best work at. You know what I mean? So like, so it's a balancing act. It's certainly a balancing act.
Well, not that I would ever compliment Nick Walker, but I do know this guy named Nick who loves to play. But also the play comes from appreciation and respect of the art. And so wanting to play because wanting to keep the art alive and wanting to stay committed. And so what I think we both learned being in ensemble, especially in a show like Hamilton, is that it's ground to play because there's a lot of ownership in that material. But it's also, you can play with slightly lower stakes because although you carry the show, you're not the guiding point throughout the entire production. And so that kind of teaches you in a safe way how to play and in what case. And that's also like what art is. Like you always need to make choices. You're always need to bring yourself to the material. And so although Nick loves to play that he's, you know, a big bear, he's really just like a little teddy bear and he just is like the biggest love bug you'll ever be, but also it. Like a monster, but like a cute one,
like the little
gremlins from Hercules. I mean, actually, if we're being honest, you're really more of a fail of Hercules.
Could you not ever say
but,
that because
but James,
that's what I'm trying to say.
I know. Don't,
if James ever sees this, I'm never going to live it down, and it would be all your fault, Eliza.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that something is all my fault, so
woof.
It's almost like there's video evidence that I can just clip that one little part,
you know. Almost, just maybe out there somewhere is video evidence of insanity. Yeah, man. But we're gonna go ahead. Sorry.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it was also like when you're like, oh, yeah, this is how I do my bows. I have that. See for yourself.
Legit, though, I do. That is the closest bow is that serious actor bow. That's the closest, because that's the thing. So that's actually a really funny story. The longest rehearsal process I had for Ain't Too Proud was that bow. They had to do that bow with me. Maybe like it took a whole rehearsal for a bow, because the thing was like, I don't like that. This is not the point. Like, let's get this done. So like they had to be like, Nick, please slow down. Nick, please slow down. Nick, please slow. And I had to keep sending me back and like until I got the timing right. Cause like, I'm just like, you move on. I don't want to do this, you know, the whole like I just want to bow and go home.
I can't remember if it was that night or like a few days later, but we were hanging out when you were still rehearsing at the studio, and we had a full like exegesis about bows, breaking down like why bows are valuable and what they can be, and then you know also did the impersonations of the various types of bows that exist. But then also we're like figuring out how can you bow, Nick, and not feel like a fraud, but also like be respectful of everyone who's given you their energy, just like you gave them yours.
So true. The amount of exegesises that me and Eliza have had could maybe like, it's almost too many. we talk, Eliza's like one of my go-to calls. For like anything having to do with my writing, anything like that's just we've broken down a lot of crazy shit about this industry, you know, and we'll continue to as we are doing now, you know. Look at that.
Just like this.
Look just like this.
This is just like this. Yeah. And so, okay, we've spoken a little bit about Ain't Too Proud, but I also want to talk about Six and the choreography, because that show. It's just, it's so much fun. We saw it in London, and then I saw it. Actually, Six was the last show I saw before Broadway shut down.
Oh my gosh, amazing. I'm glad you got a chance to see it.
Me too. And I mean, you were about to have opening night.
That is true.
What was like that emotion like? Just to change up this energy a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that was a bummer for sure. For sure. I would say, and also, you know, it's just like the nature of a 24-hour news cycle is that you almost always find things out from the internet before you find out about them from the person that you would expect to hear about. And that's like just the nature of the business. I feel like that was true for pretty much everyone. But it was particularly strange for us because the timing was like the shutdown is taking place, no gatherings of 500 people or more starting at 5 p.m. And we thought, performance is at 6:30. But like, surely we're not gonna just not do it. Are we not doing it? So the associates and I are texting back and forth. And then like 30 minutes later, we got an email that basically three sentences that was like, the governor's made this decision. We will not have the performance tonight. Thank you. And we were like, wait, that's it? But then, you know, another 30 minutes went by and we got like an in-depth, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. And we still were able to like do a very small gathering with cast and crew, and you know, a lot of people had flown in from London, creatives that hadn't been there for the whole previews process. And so we still got to have a little moment just to cheers and connect and say, see you when we see you, I guess. Mm-hmm. No, so I would say all in all, better this way than the other way, which would be one opening and then not having a chance to build off that momentum because the world imploded, and also opening when it's not safe and feeling like we're not making a wise decision for like the sake of our company, for the sake of the public, etc. So now we are in a holding pattern like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But the show itself is such a trip and really fun, and those performers are working their butts off for 75 minutes, which, let me tell you, I keep going down in length of show. Hamilton's, you know, a solid 2 hour, 55 minute production, including intermission. Kong's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, which included a 20 minute intermission, which was a game changer. So I would be home from King Kong before they were out of the show at Hamilton. It was amazing and life changing. But now 75 minutes, I mean, I have screwed myself. I can't go back. I didn't know what life could be like. And now I know, and it's just going to be, it's going to be a loss.
Gross. Gross.
Yeah.
Wow. But the show is extraordinary. What I love about, so I think good art happens when people who know themselves and are willing to be like vulnerable and honest with themselves as a human being create art that reflects that. And so what is spectacular about that show is that Toby and Lucy, who created it, are just the kindest humans I've ever encountered and so unabashed about what they want to create. And I think when material is unapologetic, whether or not it's comedy, entertaining, dramatic, whatever, but when it's unapologetic about what it's trying to do is when it's successful, because that material knows what it is, you know? And Toby and Lucy have created that. And so they've just created this show that reflects the type of humans they are, which are people that are full of light, that want to empower others, that have a bit of a snarky take on, you know, some terrible things that went down in history, but also saying, what can we do with it? How are we going to take this? And how are we going to move forward? And also they love pop music. Like Toby, for his 21st birthday, was given a full-size Beyonce cutout. Like, they love pop music. And so they created catchy bops. Like, that music is undeniably catchy. So it's just fun.
And I love the Her Story. That is such a nice touch.
Oh, they're very clever. I mean, it's full of little, like, clever puns throughout. But Her Story is a real winner.
Yeah. What do you think, like, the first show back is going to be like for 6 and 8 2 Crowd?
Oh, I mean, all of us are going to have to do, you know, like a few weeks of rehearsals, because let me tell you, if you go on like 1 week vacation, you come back, you're like, I forgot the show. So like, this is going to be a situation. Yeah. But once we're done with rehearsals and we stop being scared out of our minds, and then people come into the space and everyone's scared out of their minds again, I think it's just going to be electric, because I think we are people that are made to connect, and we're people that are made to relate and express ourselves. And we've felt so cooped up for so long. Like, even, this is kind of silly, but I've been taking, Andy Blankenbuehler has been teaching class like 3 times a week. And so we've been doing all these combos, and he's been really intentionally trying to be wary of space constraints. And so we've been doing a lot of like tension material, like things that are a little bit more contained. But today we just did like a really big dance number that was full of release. And it was actually one of the most energizing things I think any of us have done in the last 5 weeks, because we felt like we were pushing past the boundaries that our present circumstances are kind of putting on us. And so I feel like that first show will be that same sort of sensation, but exponentially greater. Because I feel like there's just such a desire to like be around people again and to get to do things where we can bring to life what we love and share ourselves with people in that way. So I think it's just going to be such a blast. Nicholas.
Oh, me? It's my turn. No, I completely agree. I think it's going to be beautiful once we get back, because I think exactly like Eliza said, you know, this is what we do, and this is who we are, and you know, being cooped up, and it's also, you know, I think that when we come back, because, you know, looking at it, you know, none of us can predict this thing. None of us know what's happening. None of us know the details. I think there is a comfort in that, but it's also just the truth. We don't know what's happening. We don't know what the date is. We don't know. But whenever the date is, it's going to have to be a date that audiences feel safe coming back. But I think that what's wonderful about that is the amount of trust that's going to have to be in our buildings to make these shows happen is going to be massive. And you know, there will be guidelines and there will be a new thing to keep us safe. But I just think that I'm hoping that you're going to see a lot of people who just have been waiting to be back on stage and in the seats. I'm hoping that it's almost like when you're training for, when training for a marathon, when you're practicing basketball, whatever, you know, you wear like ankle weights and you you try to add the extra weight so that when you're actually doing the thing, it's like a whole release. And I'm just hoping it's going to be like that, where, you know, we've been kind of holding ourselves back for this moment. And then as soon as the moment hits, you know, it's going to be something real special. And I know for the Ancient Proudcast specifically, that's, you know, cause it's all the amount of, kind of talent in that building is ridiculous, and I just feel like our first night back is going to be a wild, wild party. Yeah. So, yeah, man. But I was literally just having this conversation with my wife. You know, I think so much of what we have to reconcile with right now is just the fact that, like, allowing it to be uncertain and allowing it to be scary. You know what I mean? Like. Because it is. This is unprecedented. This is something we never in our lives thought would happen. And on top of that, you know, I think about like my, you know, so many of like it's specifically our sector of the entertainment industry. You know, film TV will probably be back, not anytime soon, but like sooner than we will. You know, we are truly probably the last sector because of what we do. And it's not just us, right? It's, you know, it's West End, it's New Orleans, it's any place where your economy thrives off of crowd interaction. But that, and I, so, you know, I think that for a long time, I've tried to be like, no, it's just, you know, be positive and whatever. It's like, no, you have to deal with the fact that that's like a little scary, but I truly do believe that we are coming back. I think it's too vital. You know, it's too vital. And that's why I think the celebration would be so big, because it's something that we need. We need to get in a dark room and hear some art. That's just part of the human condition.
Well, art has existed for centuries. Like, since humans have been alive, we have documentation and record of that people look for ways to express themselves, which is why you have cave drawings, which is why before people could document stories, they were telling them orally. Like, art has survived many other instances throughout history of world plagues and like mm-hmm. natural disasters. And yet still, because human beings are naturally resilient and adaptable, and because artists are inherently creative and find creative solutions, and people have a desire to express themselves in one way or the other and connect and find words to express themselves that artists can provide, I just can't foresee a future where it doesn't exist. It might look different, but I think that's what's spectacular about, we are most equipped to handle something different because we are an industry that thrives off of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's something about people who do something 8 times a week, the same thing in front of an audience, or who write for that or direct for that. Like, it is such a unique skill. And that's already so difficult in and of itself, that you are the most resilient type of people. And I know Broadway will be back. This is just intermission, as a lot of the companies have been posting, but it has been hard to think about like when the next time is that we're going to see something. And we are so fortunate, things like this where we can interact over Zoom, or the 25 years of Disney, which is coming up after this, you know, mm-hmm. like it's so exciting that we do have, some things are filmed. We can watch Newsies, watch Legally Blonde, but it's obviously not the same.
Thanks for listening to the 16th episode of B-Way Show, the podcast. There's no MCU post-credit scene on this episode, so come back next time to hear the rest of our conversation, starting with the films Eliza and Nick have been watching. Quarantine has been going on so very long that since this interview, John and I are yet again on a Marvel marathon. But this time we're watching the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, films and TV shows. WandaVision has us wanting all the superhero content we can get. We're celebrating Black History Month, and coming up on February 21st, Ham for Progress presents The Joy in Our Voices, quote, an evening of hope, inspiration, and community celebrating Black art and artists, starring members of our current Hamilton companies and featuring some special guests. This event is streaming February 21st at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook and YouTube, end quote. And speaking of what to watch, of course, Hamilton Film is now a part of that beautiful list of Broadway pro shots. Which one would you love to see next? Tweet at me. I just started a giveaway. See the prizes on the brand new Twitter account dedicated to B-Way Show the Podcast, at B-Way Show Podcast. That's B-W-A-Y-S-H-O Podcast. Just think of it as Broadway Show Shauna. To enter, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. DM me a screenshot, and just like that, you're a spy on the inside and entered to win. The giveaway runs through March 17th at midnight Eastern Time. Thank you to the Showtrions, and special shout out to the Showbill and Showstopper levels. Here we go. John Benson, Alyssa Wallace, Ashley Stazak, Judy Kottner, Naomi Kottner, Eva Fink-Clausen, Andy Gilderhus, Shannon Wheeler, Teresa Piliero, and Lisa Michelle Martine O'Neill. To find out what the Showtrions are all about, head over to patreon.com/bwayshow. We do weekly trivia and monthly video chats. It's a fun time. Come check it out. Thanks as always to Kyle Braxton, aka Geddon, for these awesome beats, Jelani Remy for the beautiful intro riff, Alex Brightman for the Showtime promo, Chelsea Hill, aka Illustrating Diva, for the cool cover art, and all of the wonderful guests. We don't know the future of live theater, or when Broadway will be back, but we do know it's on all of us to get through this pandemic. Wear a mask, be safe, and let's take care of ourselves. We'll see you at the show.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.